obviously sees that as part of her job.
Yes.
As the way he agreed. So he's, you know, he's looking at it as, well, I'm going to work, I'm bringing home a wage, I'm holding up my end of the deal.
Yes, that's right.
And so the problem, what I, at least what I'm seeing there, and maybe it's typical, isn't so much that, isn't so much the second job as that they weren't aimed in the same direction when they got married.
Exactly. I think you're right. The second job became an expression of that difference. It became the battleground where that difference became clear and caused trouble. Evan and Nancy were pursuing what I call in the second shift different gender strategies. A gender strategy is an often unconscious way in which we try to enact the ideals we hold of being a proper man or a proper woman, a proper father or proper mother, proper wife or proper husband. And we early on have these ideals. They become part of our ego ideal, you might say, the part of us that tells us how we ought to be. And that they had very different ones. But I would say that something else was going on between Nancy and Evan also, on Evan's side, that his resistance to sharing had some emotional sources as well. He was, first of all, afraid that Nancy would dominate him, and I can understand why he was afraid of that, because she would begin to nag him. Evan, do this. Evan, do that. You know, and he didn't like that, and he didn't want to be her orderly in what was still defined as her terrain, you know. So that was one, I think, source of resistance in addition to their original difference of opinion. And there was a second one, too, and that was, I think, deeper. Evan had had an alcoholic mother who, in his childhood, had gradually drawn herself away from him. And so his experience growing up was of this person, this important person in his life, withdrawing from him. And I think that the way he talked about Nancy and the second shift, he was afraid of the same thing happening with Nancy. In other words, if he did more at home, she would do less, and she would kind of pull out on him. And I think he was afraid of that. And my conclusion, therefore, is that couples who are running into real problems over this issue ought to really sit down and talk very respectfully and carefully about the emotional sources of their resistance to listening to each other, and that there are emotional anchors attached to their gender strategies, which we need a way of talking about in order to resolve this problem.
I got a question about career strategies, I guess. How does it seem to be most successful, or how is it usually handled with having two careers in the family? At least in my career, I have to move quite often, and it has to be a continuous line. And I just wondered how you could put two careers of that nature, or even if the other career was of the type where you wind up staying someplace for, well, basically forever. How do you put the two, the need to have two main careers together? And I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Well,
thank you.
It's a very good question. I don't think that you can without the family suffering. And that leads me to think that if this trend toward increasing numbers of mothers in the workforce is to continue, that what we really need to do is modify careers and give some choice to working parents as to what kind of hours they're going to work. I'd like to see some flex time, some part-time work, some parental leave, so that a working parent could for the period when his or her children are small, go to, say, three-quarters time work. And then when they're older, go back to full-time work. The European countries, the Scandinavian countries, specifically Sweden, have made enormous strides in this direction, modifying the structure of work to allow parents to be the kind of parents they want to be. But I think that structures as they are now, that is, careers as they are now structured, putting two together is extremely difficult, and I think it marginalizes family life.
Well, we are about midway through here. I would like to reintroduce our guest for those of you who may just have tuned in, and also tell you about the programs we have scheduled for next week. We're talking with Arlie Hochschild, author of the book The Second Shift, Working Parents and the Revolution at Home. And we'll continue in just a second, and we have another caller we will talk with. We'd like to know that in hour number two of our program today, we will talk about creation science, and our guest will be Duane Gish, Vice President of the Institute for Creation Research. It's located in California. In Santee, which is a suburb of San Diego. On the program Monday, we will not have live programs. We'll have repeats, taped repeats of two shows from this past fall, both interviews with novelists who traveled to Champaign-Urbana to give readings from their work, and we had an opportunity to talk with them here on Focus. In hour number one, you'll hear an interview with Alan Gerganis. His book is Oldest Living Confederate Widow Tells All, a book that sold very well and was well received. And in hour number two, we'll talk with Oscar Huelos about his book, The Mambo Kings Play Songs of Love, also a book that that did very well for him. We'll be back here live on Tuesday. Next week, Tuesday at 10 o'clock, we'll be speaking with historian Walter Lefebvre from Cornell University, talking about the recent U.S. military invasion of Panama and the future of the relationship between the two countries. Next week on Wednesday, it is our it's the first Wednesday of the month, and for a long time we've been doing on that day a program about cooking. We talk about cooking various things and share recipes. And our guest next week will be Mike Cox from the Great American Seafood Company, sitting in for our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. We'll talk about seafood recipes. Next week on Thursday, the topic is looking for the greenhouse effect. We'll talk with Michael Schlesinger, a professor of atmospheric sciences here at the U of I, who is working on research on the greenhouse effect. And then 1 week from today, our topic is earthquake preparedness in the Midwest. And we'll have two guests, Wangping Chen. He is a seismologist and associate professor of geology here at the U of I. And Doug Fouch will join us also. He's a professor of civil engineering. And we'll talk about the possibility of a serious earthquake here in the Midwest. You know, after the San Francisco earthquake, there was a lot of attention here focused on the New Madrid Fault and the possibility we could have a serious earthquake here, and the fact that if we did, it could cause serious damage, because here in the Midwest, we really don't think about earthquakes, and we're not ready. We'll talk about some of those issues on Focus 1 week from today. Coming up on our afternoon magazine today, Matt Ehrlich will be talking about Stephanie Moore, an observer with Witness for Peace, and they'll be talking about Nicaragua. And again, you'll have the opportunity to call in if you have questions or comments. This morning on Focus, we're talking with Arlie Hochschild. She is a professor of sociology at the University of California at Berkeley. She has written a couple of books. Her most recent one is The Second Shift, Working Parents and the Revolution at Home. It's published by Viking. In addition, she's written for Harper's, Mother Jones, Psychology Today, and the New York Times Book Review. She makes her home in San Francisco. The book essentially looks at research that she has done over the past 8 years, interviewing a number of families where both the husband and wife work. And these are families with children as well. And it makes the argument that there are many women essentially who are working two jobs. They're going out of the home, going to the factory, to the office, and they're working one shift. And then when they come home, they are doing most of the work involved in running the household, laundry and cooking and dishes and taking care of kids. And that constitutes the second shift. That's where the title of the book comes from. If you have questions, comments, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We have another caller here, and we'll go right back to the phones to talk with someone here on line one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling with regard to a comment that was made by your guest a little earlier about perhaps women are changing faster than men at the present time. And that really got me to thinking, and there's sort of an implied sense that this change in women is positive. And you started to get into this a few moments ago when you were saying that the real change needs to take place in the workplace to allow some humane solution to division of out of the home labor and in the home labor.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that perhaps the rapid change that women are making is not very positive, in the sense that they're not recognizing that a professional role, a job, has been vacated, the care of the home and all of the family activities, and that the solution to this is perhaps neither for the woman to assume all of the care of the home, or for this to be divided equally at the level it was previously maintained between the man and the wife in the home, mm-hmm. but rather to just diminish the amount that got done. Yeah, and I see a lot of women trying to keep their home the way their mother kept their home,
mm-hmm.
when they're in truly very different circumstances.
Right.
And the thing is, most people are allowing the demands of the workplace, most families are allowing the demands of the workplace to simply roll over them, that they meet the demands of the workplace, mm-hmm. and don't resist that. And then when they come home, many men say, well, I've done enough. I'm mm-hmm. I've done enough for the day. That's it. This is the only humane way to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the women try to do superhuman feats and maintain the home in the way that they would like to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be, may not be healthy.
Mm-hmm. It's I found a great variety of responses to the standard of at which the house should be kept. Some women came home after an 8-hour day and started to wash the walls. I mean, literally, they were immaculate housekeepers. And to maintain a 1950s standard of housekeeping when we're in 1980s economic situation was, it seemed, oppressive to both the wife herself and to her husband, whom she was trying to get to help her in this. But actually, I found a majority of the couples doing less than they had previous in their earlier in their marriage. And studies indicate that even working mothers in the 1980s are doing less housework than they did in the 1960s. So men aren't sharing more, and women are doing less. And the talk was kind of like that, too. They'd say, well, does the child really need to eat greens? You know, I make them, and he doesn't eat them anyway, so I don't make salads for him dinner anymore. Or does a kid really need clean clothes every day? He likes to wear his overalls, you know, his favorite overalls. Why can't he wear them all week? Sometime that was extended to baths. There was a talk like that about the house. I actually found this kind of talk much more common to men than women. Sometimes they would also say about daycare, well, it's okay to send a child to daycare with a cold, because the other kids at daycare give my child their colds. Why shouldn't he give them his cold? And my response was to think, well, when we're talking about the house, okay, you know, but when we're talking about the child, not okay. It seemed to me that there was a kind of a minimization of what the child needs, a sort of reduction in kind of the cultural appreciation of what a child needs that gave me pause. For example, one father of a 2.5-year-old girl said, Well, you know, she really needs her independence, and she loves her friends at daycare. She's very sociable, and she'd rather be there than here. And I really want her to be self-sufficient. And I thought that was language appropriate to, you know, a 10-year-old, but not appropriate to 2.5-year-old. And it seemed to me that in contrast to the 19th century, where needs of children were being perhaps exaggerated to legitimate the withdrawal of women from the labor force, that what we're seeing today is the opposite, is a minimization of what a child needs to legitimate women's participation in the labor force.
Hmm.
So this business of minimizing what the house needs can be part of a kind of marginalization of family life that I think we as a culture ought to look at and consider problematic.
I wonder, it seems to me, though, that something that I keep coming back to as I think about this as a bedrock issue of a lot of these other things is it has a lot to do with how men and women think of themselves as men and women and what they think constitutes the job description, so to speak,
yes.
of men and women. And that there still seem to be a lot of people, perhaps more men than women, who are still dividing up the world in terms of men's work and women's work.
Yes.
And that household tasks are mostly female.
Yeah.
And then perhaps that's because, you know, they grew up, still there are a lot of men who grew up in houses, in households, where that's the way things were divided. Dad went to the office and mom stayed
right.
home, and that's the way it was.
And Dad actually, in the 50s, in the Leave It to Beaver generation, did quite a lot around the house. It was often things done on wood. He would change the oil in the car. He would mow the lawn. He would trim it and hedge it. And there are tasks like that. But what's happening now when women are working full-time outside the home is that, as you say, David, women are doing the daily tasks more often, like getting a meal on the table, that have a deadline to them, you know, by 6 each night. And men are doing the tasks like fixing a lampshade that could be put off to a weekend. So women are feeling under the pressure of what I call a work-family speed-up. And they more often do two things at once. They will be folding the laundry and talking to a child. Or talking on the phone, answering phone calls, and writing out the bills. Men would more often do one thing at a time. Like take the child to the zoo, you know, or make a gourmet meal. And women more often took the mental responsibility for caring for the home. Men would more often say, well, what would you like me to do, sweetie? So all this added up to it being more of an issue for her. And women actually got less sleep, and they got sick more often and felt more mentally strained by it. And often men felt like they were doing their part. They felt virtuous, actually. And the sad part, the poignant part, this is a poignant story, you know, and I'm not telling a male-bashing story. I'm really, to me, this is poignant because these men loved their wives and honestly wanted to make their marriages work. And, but they were doing it with kind of old-fashioned cultural ideals that didn't fit the circumstances of their lives. And it seemed to me that couples were living in a stalled revolution. Women had changed, but the workplace has not changed. And women have changed, but men are living with cultural ideals that encourage them to consider their notion of manhood as associated with wage earning. And not what they're doing at home, you know. So men are turning over to women the job of tending for the home. Women are turning it over partly to daycare workers, partly it isn't getting done. And I think children are suffering. And what we need to do, if we're going to keep going in the direction that we're going in, of women working outside the home, is to redesign a society that makes this work. If this is to become the new mainstream family, let's make it humane and not redefine the needs of the child so that they're smaller and smaller, but keep them as they really are, and modify schedules of work, and redefine cultures of manhood. In a way, I think men are living with a stone on their head. They get pressured to do more at home, and then they walk out into the job and into a culture that says a measure of a man is his paycheck. So he doesn't feel thanked by anybody much for what he's doing at home. So I think that's the sign of a stalled revolution. And men are suffering from it just as much as women are.
We're moving here into our last 10 minutes. I'd just like to remind folks who are listening at home, again, our guest is sociologist Arlie Hochschild. We're talking with her about her book, The Second Shift, Working Parents and the Revolution at Home. I have two callers holding. We'll try to get both of them in before we have to finish. We'll go next to our toll-free line. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Well, I guess she kind of covered some of the issues that I was concerned about is when are we going to get back into the one in a family where Ma or Pa can stay home, whichever one is going to be the wage earner, and take care of the kids, bring them up the way they should. This will eliminate the need for daycare. It'll solve the many problems of this country as far as trying to furnish this daycare. And another thing with daycare that really bugs me is the fact that if you get the wrong element in these daycare centers, to mold the minds of these youngsters away from the ideals of the family and of the country, of a religion, or whatever you want to say, they can just devastate the whole system.
Yeah.
What did Hitler do? He took the minds of the kids, and they took care of Ma and Pa. If you didn't think the way they wanted you, they turned you in, and you went off to Dachau or Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. And these kids did that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we have to ask ourselves, are we going to go back to a traditional home as the model for most American families, or are we going to continue with the two-job family as the model of the family? And my prediction is that we are going to continue with the two-job family as the new mainstream family. There's been a trend since 1890 that really, I think, is a result of industrialization toward women moving into the labor force, and that really hasn't reversed itself except for 3 years after World War II for the whole century. So I think we're going to see more women and not fewer women working outside the home. And then the question becomes, are we going to do it just the way it's being done now with its high divorce rate and its enormous strains, or are we going to make some major changes that make this a livable arrangement? And that's what I'm writing a second shift about.
Hmm. Let's go, and I want to get this last caller in here on line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you've answered many of my questions. I was concerned about the children and what happens to the children in these sorts of situations.
Yes.
And I kind of object to what the last caller said. There are many women out there who are working who just don't have a choice.
That's right.
They have to work. And I think that our society is letting its own responsibilities go by not taking better care of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't, I mean, the kids are the future. You have to have good daycare because many women don't have any choice. They have to leave their kids in daycare.
That's right. That's right. You know, if President Bush really meant it about a pro-family policy, then he would do something about not just daycare, but about getting corporations to offer part-time jobs, flex time, flex place, get more flexible work schedules, parental leave. There's so much that could be done to make a humane family life possible, and Bush is doing absolutely nothing.
We are just about the point where we're going to have to finish. We just have maybe a minute or two. And I want to ask you just as a last question. You talk in the book about being in a transitional stage. We're moving perhaps from one kind of family to another.
Yes.
And we have talked about how the outside world, the world outside of the family, perhaps can and should change to make things easier for families. What do you think is happening, is going to happen inside the family? I mean, if we're in a transitional stage in the way men and women relate to each other as husband and wife and parents and so forth, what are we moving towards, do you think?
Well, I'm an optimist. I think we're moving toward this humane vision of the two-job family. I think it's going to be a struggle, and I think it's going to be a halting move, but I would like to see us move toward the Swedish model, and I think we are. If you look at studies that compare what the husbands of working wives did at home in 1960 and what they're doing in the 1980s, you find the arrow is pointing up. Men averaged 20% of the housework in 1960s is 30% today. So I think we're moving in that direction. But there, we could certainly do it much more smoothly, and we could really save a lot of marriages and a lot of childhoods if we had some planning about this. And I would like to see the workforce change. I'd like to see workers get together and go to their employers asking for some work schedule change, and I'd like to see couples, working couples, get together with each other to iron out what problems they're having, getting the second shift going. Maybe there could be some kind of meal service we could get going, more on-site daycare. Really, I think we ought to have a Marshall Plan at this point to rescue the family from what are very difficult external circumstances. Not blame the people who are suffering from a stalled revolution, but unstall the revolution.
Hmm. And where do you think that leadership for those kind of changes is going to come from?
I think it should come from both youth. Before young people get into two-job situations, they should see that they can't live the kind of life they want to live without structural changes. I would like to see a whole renewal of the women's movement, maybe call it something else, you know, women's and men's movement toward, humane living, family living, something like that. It would have a new face, presumably, but I'd like to see that among the young, and I'd like to see couples themselves who are facing these problems get together. And leadership usually comes from those who are most pinched and most hurting. In this case, I think it's the mothers who are trying to do two things at once. But they're, they and their husbands.
Hmm. Well, I thank you very much for talking with us today. We appreciate you giving us your time.
Well, thank you very much, David.
Our guest, Arlie Hochschild, is the author of the book, The Second Shift, Working Parents and the Revolution at Home. She's a professor of sociology at the University of California at Berkeley. Her book was just published this past summer by Viking Penguin. If you're interested, you might go out and take a look at it. We will take a break now, and when we continue with Focus 580, we'll be talking about creation science, and our guest will be Duane Gish. He is the vice president of the Institute for Creation Research, which is located in Santee, California. That's a suburb of San Diego. We'll be talking with him, and we'll take your questions, too, so we hope that you will stay with us. Now, though, we'll take a break for some news and a market update, so please stay tuned.